And I've got Dr. Stephen Gunson in the studio. He is going to talk to us about what the Capitol's got coming up on Tuesday, February the 25th at 6 p.m. Hello, how are you?
Good, Annie. How are you?
Great. Now, The Seven Samurai, it, of course, is not Australian, but it is one of those films that informs filmmakers all around the world.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's probably one of the key influential films in world cinema, and there probably wouldn't have been Star Wars and directors like Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese, you know, Quentin Tarantino, George Lucas are just constantly referencing this film and just pulling from it. So it remains one of the seminal films ever.
And it's one of the reasons for why the Capitol runs, RMIT's Capitol in the middle of the city here, actually runs this kind of series of films, the best films you've never seen.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth going to the Capitol if anyone has never been. It's one of the most beautiful cinemas. It's one of the only single screen cinemas left in Melbourne. So come along. $10 tickets. So where else are you going to get a $10 ticket on a Tuesday night? The Seven Samurai is playing on the Tuesday, the 25th of Feb at 6 p.m. It's got a candy bar. It's going to be fantastic, and you'll get to sit in one of the great cinemas in Australia.
Now, the reason for why this particular film is such a fascinating film, as we've already pointed out, is one of these seminal films. But let's investigate Akira Kurosawa, and you know, he's making a film about 16th century samurai who were paid for protectors.
Yeah, and this is this truth. So Kurosawa wanted to make a film about a samurai, and he never really had made a samurai film up to this point. He had sort of samurai moments in a couple of his earlier films, but he had never made a samurai film. And he wanted to make not a genre samurai film, but a historically accurate samurai film. And initially, he was interested in making a film about like the day in the life of a samurai, but he just couldn't really land on the story or anything like that. And then one of his producers came to him and he said, actually, in the 16th century, villages were very vulnerable to bandits. And what they would do is they would hire samurais to actually go and guard their village. And Kurosawa thought, now that's a good idea. So that's where the genesis for the film came about. So it was grounded in historical truth. And across the film, I mean, he's really interested in the characters and the real people that actually lived during that time, how the farmers worked, what they ate, how they operated, what they wore. There's historical truth in all of this in the film. So it's not just a samurai film. It is also a historical film about 16th century rural Japan.
And the other thing about it is that we've got to remember the context that Kurosawa was making this film in. So it's after the Second World War. And it will be, people have cottoned on already that there's a kind of mythological Western element to this, isn't there? A fusing of Western and Japanese cultural norms.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Kurosawa was a huge John Ford fan, so he's watching, you know, John Ford films a lot, and he's really interested in pulling ideas from the West. I mean, he was unfairly, you know, called the most Western of all the directors in Japan, and he hated this title, and it was really to put him down in a way, because I think a lot of Japanese directors and communities really were a bit grumpy that he was so successful in the West, and, you know, other directors like Ozu probably weren't. But his films were extremely accessible. And I think it's because he was really interested in like Shakespeare, and he was adapting a whole range of things coming from the West, not just Japan. So he could appeal also to those Western directors, which is why I think directors like George Lucas and Spielberg, you know, they really loved what he was doing, because they could see bringing those things into their own films.
Now, one of the reasons for why it's significant to actually chat about this on a film show that is actually usually talking about the Australian film industry is because, one, the techniques that were used to make this film, this action film, are really important to discuss.
Yeah, and he used what's called like multiple cameras. So he had two or three cameras operating all the time, and placed in different positions. So he was just trying to shoot a whole range of different action. So it was a different sort of film. And this film was shot completely differently, which is why the film looks so unique. You know, most films have like an establishing shot, then they have a mid shot and a close up. He wasn't doing a lot of that. He was just putting the cameras down, which are all at different positions, and he was just letting the action flow. And that's why it's such a masterpiece of film editing, like the way it's actually being put together. It seems so flawless. And with this multiple cameras that he was using, it was the first time he did this. And it was actually to cut down on time because this film was like hugely over budget. They were budgeted for 70,000 US and it went to 500,000. And on multiple times he was threatened that the film would be shut down because it was made at Toho Studios, which simultaneously were making Godzilla. So could you imagine the people who are running Toho Studios, they would have been thinking our whole studio is going to be brought down by, you know, Godzilla and the Seven Samurai. So he sort of came up with this idea that we could actually shoot a lot quicker if we had these multiple cameras operating all the time. He loved this concept so much, he actually incorporated that for each and every one of his films following from this. So it really profoundly changed how he made films.
And it profoundly changed filmmaking.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And other directors were, you know, really picking up on that. You know, George Miller, absolutely, for the Mad Max films. He was taking on these sorts of concepts.
It's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. Riveting stuff. And it's all about time and motion. It's about how fast things are moving in this particular element, yeah. This fluidity of it.
And something Toho Studios demanded was this has to be shot in a studio set so we can control it. And he said, no, that's not going to happen. It's going to be shot. We're going to build a village. And what happened was in the final sequence, it's pouring rain, right? And that wasn't meant to happen. It was meant to be shot over summer.
Oh my God. And the mud stuff is so amazing.
But the shoot went on for so long. They were shooting that in February in Japan, which was snow. So the crew had to use water buckets to melt all the snow. And what that created was the mud slush and all those puddles and all of that. So that's why it's raining at the end. Now, Kurosawa loved rain because, I mean, if you see the opening of Rashomon where it's just teeming down and, you know, Throne of Blood, and there's always rain in Kurosawa films. So it seems consistent. But actually, the plan was that it was going to be completely dry in this whole sequence. But it works so well, the rain and the mud and everything with that sequence.
He's the definition of the wild director.
He is. And Sam Peckinpah and those other wild directors, you know, they're citing Kurosawa. They're saying, well, if Kurosawa could do that, I can do that. And like The Wild Bunch, you know, that's another film, Sam Peckinpah's sort of epic Western, where they're really pulling from The Seven Samurai. There hasn't really been an action film that surpassed The Seven Samurai in how effective it is and also how influential it is.
Yeah, it's amazing. The other thing that's significant is the use of close-ups.
Yeah, absolutely. And he also was bringing into this film what was called the telephoto lens, and that was could capture wider range in the frame, but really, really minute detail. And that's what he wanted to see. So he could do it with close-ups of the farmers. Like, you really get the texture of their faces and their eyes. You can see all of that. But also during the final battle scene, like, you're seeing, you know, people's faces literally being pushed into mud puddles and things like that. It's really effective. And because he spends so much of the film setting up the characters, you know, when that final sequence is happening and you're seeing those expression on their faces, you're really feeling for them and you're really with them during this final battle.
Well, it's political in a sense too, that this film is actually from the point of view of the participants, the combatants, not from the point of view of the people who believe that they're the controlling influence.
That's right. That's right. And across the film, this was a film about the villagers and the farmers. And these weren't farmers who turned into superheroes at all. Like, most of them didn't want to fight. And the opening sequence are the farmers sitting around in a circle. And there's something interesting going on with circles in this film. So the camera's always panning in circles. People are sitting in circles, which is really interesting. And often... sorry, I'm just moving the mic here. And they don't want to fight. And the whole argument is, do we actually go and battle? And this is the film. So some of them don't go to fight, others do. And that's why they bring in the samurai, because they're like, we actually need to bring in some force to battle the bandits who are going to come and pillage our land.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. So therefore, the way the editing becomes an absolute masterful stroke to the filmmaking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and Kurosawa was, you know, he was really involved in the editing and how he wanted the shots to look and how he really wanted to construct the film in a particular way. Some directors, like John Ford, famously, he never went into an editing studio in his whole life. He would just go fishing once the film was shot, and he would just say, "Show me the film when it's done." But Kurosawa was not like that.
Wow, that's an amazing idea.
Yeah. Well, it is
actually.
Well, John Ford thought, well, I'm only going to mess up my film, you know, if I get in there. So, you know, let somebody else handle it. And I mean, John Ford just, you know, he liked to be on the set and that's it. He didn't really.
So that stagecoach, that famous stagecoach sequence was a single shot or what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is about these directors, I mean, Hitchcock is the same. The way they're shooting, it's very much, it can only be cut in a particular way.
That was the point.
Yeah.
And this one is all about, you know, you've got a plan, but you can't plan for everything.
That's right. And because also they've got multiple cameras for each scene, I mean, there could have been 25 different versions of this film.
Yeah, you know, of course.
Like you could cut it in so many different ways, which is why, you know, Kurosawa's fingerprints is on each and every shot in this film.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
The other thing about this screening that's going to be on Tuesday at the Capitol, February the 25th at 6 p.m. Yeah. For only $10, it's a bit like going to the op shop and getting Dostoevsky or something. You know, you're allowed for 30 cents.
It's a little treat. It's a midweek treat.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah. But there's been a new a 4K restoration.
Yeah, 4K. Tell us about that. 4K restoration, which I have actually seen this 4K restoration, which the Criterion Collection were behind in funding this. It looks absolutely magnificent. Like, I've never seen a film look so stunning as this looks, and to see it on the big screen is an absolute must, and you know, it is an absolute treat. And it does.
They're always big. His films are big.
Yeah, and this film deserves to be seen on the big screen. Can I just say a quote? Kurosawa was asked about this film, and he said, "It's a movie as rich as a buttered steak topped with grilled eel." Isn't that great?
That's so Japanese.
Yeah, it's so Kurosawa. Like, everything is so epic and big and things like that. One other thing, if people don't like kind of samurai films and they think, well, it's not really my sort of thing, it's not really a samurai film like you'd expect. And he didn't do it like a samurai genre film.
No.
He would go on to do some sort of more genre-y samurai films. But this is, it's about a farming community. It's a love story. It's a family melodrama. It's a comedy. Like, there is such wonderful comedy. And Annie, we're talking about Kurosawa's influences from the West earlier. He was really you know, he loved like Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin and those sorts of directors. And a lot of the comedy that plays out here, it is slapstick and it's so visual. The film goes, it's a long film. It's 3.5 hours. And don't be turned off by that either, because every sequence is so packed. You know, it's not one of these baggy films where you think, geez, they could have cut an hour out of that film. This film will absolutely fly in 3.5 hours.
Oh, it's so fresh. Yeah. That's the thing about watching a film like this, and this is why it's worth going if you're you want to give good audience. But if you want to be a filmmaker, this is one of the films that you should have a look at because of the way it's been made.
And people say, I mean, Paul Schrader said it's not a film you watch; it's a film you study. You know, and there is just so much going on that you can just watch it and rewatch it and rewatch it. And that's the thing. Every time I watch this film, and I've said it so many times, it's like I'm watching it for the first time, because you just see a different way of what he's actually doing in this film. And it's such a rich film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for coming in and telling us about it.
Thanks, Annie. Hope to see you next Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds